against my ribcage.
I hope not, he said finally. But that bastard's with me all the time, whispering shit inside my head.
I nodded, understood exactly what he was talking about. I could still hear my mother's voice, her wails, her fears, echoing in my own skull. Cooper's arms tightened around me, and he hitched my body up, my breasts sliding over his chest.
I try not to give in to it, though, that urge to pound someone, because whenever I do, it feels worse than all the times he beat me, like I'm turning into him, exactly like he said I would. I tell myself every day I go without doing it makes it easier, makes me less like him.
Does that work? Cooper tipped his face up toward the sky.
Hell if I know, but it's all I can think of to do.
I traced a figure eight onto Cooper's chest, his skin pebbling under my touch. Sometimes, I'd tell my mom to go ahead and kill herself. I knew she wanted to, so I'd egg her on. I never thought she'd have the guts to actually do it. She had nightmares a lot, too, and I stopped waking her up, bringing her cold washcloths and helping her go back to sleep. I let her scream and cry. By the end, I didn't care anymore. I raised my eyes and found Cooper's. He smoothed my hair back, tucked it behind my ear. He didn't tell me it was okay, or he was sure I hadn't meant it. He knew it wasn't okay. That it never would be.
That's it,
he said instead, voice quiet.
That's the worst you got?
It wasn't. But there were some things I could never say aloud, not even to Cooper, a boy as damaged as I was. How sometimes, when I whispered those awful words to my mother, the veins in her neck stood out so far from her skin I thought they might explode. How her fingernails would leave red welts down the side of her face. On the nights my words cut deepest, sliced quick and deadly as scalpels, her eyes practically bulged from her face, and I was filled with a rotten, hellish joy because at least she was looking at me. At least she finally saw me.
Stop it!
She screamed sometimes, staring at me from between the bars of her fingers.
Stop it, you evil little bitch! Stop it! Stop it!
To me, it might as well have been a love song. Allegra had locked herself in a room, talking on the phone, which is how I ended up perched on a wooden ice cream freezer while Granddad turned the crank. We were outside, the overhang of the screened porch roof protecting us from the afternoon sun, but sweat still rolled off Granddad's face as he worked. He took a quick break to wipe his forehead and noticed Charlie, who watched us from the barn doorway.
I'd like to have that hole in the stall fixed today,
my Granddad called, a hint of steel in his tone. He kept his gaze on Charlie until he moved inside the barn, then turned his attention back to me.
Careful now, he said. Make sure you keep the blanket underneath you. Otherwise, your legs are gonna stick to the metal.
I shifted, the cold seeping into my skin through the thin blanket he draped over the top of the barrel. Why don't you just buy ice cream? I asked. It seemed like a reasonable question, but Granddad looked at me like I'd lost my mind.
Wait until you taste this, girl, and you'll never ask that question again.
What flavor is it?
My daddy's creation,
Granddad said.
Pineapple, peach, and banana.
He glanced at me and laughed.
Don't go making that face.
I don't like fruit-flavored ice cream.
You'll like this. Trust me.
The screen door banged open behind us, and Allegra stepped out, her cell phone clenched in her hand. Who are you talking to? I asked. Allegra rolled her eyes and huffed out a dramatic breath.
Kate. She's all worked up over Cooper.
Hearing his name was like a hot poker in my stomach, but I tried to sound unconcerned.
Why? What's up with her and Cooper?
Nothing, Allegra said. That's the problem.
She jabbed me in the shoulder.
And don't gloat.
I'm not gloating, I said, but I couldn't keep the grin off my face.
What did you tell her?
Allegra folded her arms and stared at me.
I told her she could do a lot better than Cooper Sullivan. Boys his age only want one thing. They don't care about your mind or your heart.
I laughed until I realized Allegra wasn't joining in, her face serious.
You don't think that's true?
My granddad asked, and I swung my head in his direction.
I don't know,
I mumbled, thinking of the way Cooper touched me. All the time, like he couldn't get enough. But I was just as bad, practically stripping him naked as soon as he was within reach. Granddad smiled at me, put one hand on my bare thigh.
Ain't nothing wrong with it, Lane. It's the way boys that age are made. All hormones. They can't help themselves.
But we're special, Allegra cut in. We deserve someone who'll treat us better, who won't break our hearts.
That's right,
Granddad said, smiling at Allegra now.
Boys like Cooper don't understand what a gift you girls are. What a prize.
He squeezed my thigh gently as he spoke.
Remember what I'm telling you, Laney girl. And if that Sullivan boy ever hurts you, I got no problem kicking his ass.
Cooper's kicked an ass or two in his time, too, I said, irritated for no good reason. Granddad blew out a slow breath between pursed lips.
I've been throwing punches since before that boy was born. And let me tell you, he hurts one of my girls, he's going to be a sorry son of a bitch.
You can't go around beating up boys every time they do something Allegra or I don't like.
The hell I can't.
This is stupid, I said, throwing up my hands. Cooper didn't even do anything to me.
And I'm trying to keep it that way,
Granddad said, voice serious. After a lifetime of relying only on myself, believing in someone else felt nearly impossible. But the look in his eyes, as if I were the most precious thing he'd ever seen, made me want to try. To give in a little, and trust that maybe he wouldn't let me down. Okay, I said quietly, and Granddad smiled, his gaze pinned on me. Warmth flooded my body, even as cold from the ice cream freezer settled into my skin.
What are you doing?
Allegra demanded. I'd almost forgotten she was there. She jabbed me in the shoulder again to get my attention. Harder this time.
She's helping me make ice cream,
Granddad said, voice mild.
That's my job.
You were busy, so I asked Lane.
Well, I'm here now, Allegra said. Get up.
I started to move, but Granddad's hold on my thigh tightened, his pinky slipping under the edge of my jean shorts.
Nope,
he said, looking up at Allegra.
You can help next time. This time is Lane's turn.
Allegra stood there for a minute, her gaze shifting between Granddad and me. Her mouth pulled into a scowl, but I could see the flare of hurt in her eyes.
Fine, she said. I didn't want to help with your stupid fucking ice cream anyway.
She stormed into the house, slamming the screen door behind her. Granddad went back to churning the ice cream like nothing had happened, still using one hand on my thigh for leverage. She's going to hate me now, I said with a sigh. Granddad laughed.
She will, but not for long. Allegra has moods, but they never last. Can't take 'em personally. Gotta ride 'em out.
I thought of the way Allegra sometimes looked at me after Granddad and I had been working in the barn, or when Gran offered to braid my hair. I think there's times she wishes I hadn't come to live here.
No,
Granddad said.
That's not true. Never seen her so excited as when we found out you were coming to stay. Girl near about worked herself into a fit waiting for you.
He stopped cranking and took his hand off my leg, sat back on his heels.
But Allegra's been the center of the universe her whole life. Sharing the spotlight doesn't come natural to her, but she'll learn.
He stood and held out his hand for mine.
Now get on up from there. You're in for a treat.
I hopped off the freezer and watched as Granddad lifted the metal tube from its bed of crushed ice and rock salt. He winked at me as he twisted the lid off, motioned for me to dig in. I laughed. I don't have a spoon.
Hell, girl, you don't need a spoon. Not for the first bite.
He dipped his index finger into the ice cream and lifted a giant glob to my mouth. I hesitated only a second before licking the ice cream off his finger. It was delicious just as he'd promised. Rich and freezing cold, the flavors bursting on my tongue. It tasted nothing like ice cream from a grocery store carton.
See?
Granddad said, eyes gleaming.
What did I tell you?
He grabbed a lock of my hair between his thumb and forefinger, gave it a gentle pull. It had become his signature move with me, tugging on a loose piece of my hair or the end of my ponytail. With Allegra, it was smoothing her eyebrow with his index finger. Funny how such a simple gesture had the power to make me feel so special. I wondered sometimes if he'd done something similar with my mother, but so far I hadn't asked. I didn't want to know if it was the same. I wanted a ritual that belonged to only me. I'd been collapsed on Cooper's body for at least 10 minutes, our naked, sweaty skin stuck together. But I didn't want to move. I liked the feel of his hand sweeping up and down the length of my spine, the smell of his skin under my nose. Am I getting heavy? I whispered.
Nope.
He whispered back, nuzzling the side of my neck and making me smile. We were in his bedroom, the first time we'd had sex in an actual bed. His dad was working all day at the garage, and Holly and his mom had gone to Parsons to do a little shopping. I rolled off him, sighing when cooler air hit my overheated chest and stomach. I may not be heavy, but we're about to drown in sweat. I turned onto my side and propped my head up with one hand to look at him. Occasionally, I wondered if staring at him would ever get old. What would we do if your dad came home early? I asked with a grin. Cooper's eyes traveled down the length of me before meandering back up.
Getting dressed might be step number one.
He rolled toward me, ducked his head, and dropped an open-mouthed kiss on my breast. Cooper, I breathed. We were supposed to meet Tommy and Allegra at the pool an hour ago.
So?
His mouth moved lower.
You really want to spend all afternoon at the pool?
I didn't. I hated the pool. I preferred the swimming hole any day of the week. The town pool was small and always crowded, bodies stuffed into the marginally clean water and smashed together on the concrete, wet towels overlapping. So many people you couldn't cool off, even in the water, and the whole place stunk of rank sweat and a lethal dose of chlorine. I'd only been twice, but both times it had closed early after some kid puked in the water. I didn't think Allegra liked it either, but she'd ordered a new bikini and wanted to show it off to as many admirers as possible. Not really, I admitted. I swear, last week I saw Mike Tucker and some girl fucking in the deep end, little kids swimming right next to them. Cooper snorted, his mouth still drifting steadily downward.
That explains what I saw floating in the water. Mike's spooge.
Oh, gross, I laughed. Now it's official. I'm never getting in that pool again. Cooper wedged himself between my thighs, rested his head on my stomach.
We can go, if you really want to. Allegra'll probably flip her shit if we don't show up at all.
I raked my hand through his hair. I don't care. Screw her. Allegra was still mad at me for helping Granddad make the ice cream, so I wasn't too worried about pleasing her. And I liked being alone with Cooper, the two of us tangled in his soft sheets.
Yeah?
He shifted his head and pressed his chin into my belly button. Yeah, I said, squirming. Let's stay here. Cooper grunted his agreement and settled his head back on my stomach. My gaze drifted around the room, drinking it in. I hadn't gotten much of a look earlier, when Cooper had crowded me through the doorway, pushed me back onto his bed. From what I'd seen, his small, shabby house had been about what I'd expected. But his room surprised me. It was uncluttered, and mature in a way I couldn't quite put my finger on. No posters of half-naked girls or muscle cars, no piles of dirty clothes or empty beer cans, just a single black-and-white print of a forest above his double bed, clean white blinds, and a scuffed red toolbox against the wall. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Cooper following my gaze.
Can't leave it in the truck, he said. Dumbasses try and steal tools.
I nodded. Do you want to be a mechanic? Like your dad? Cooper looked up from where he was drawing circles around my belly button with his index finger.
Not really, he said. But I'm good at it. It's steady work. Everybody's car craps out from time to time, right? What the hell else am I gonna do?
For the first time, it occurred to me maybe Cooper wasn't as okay with following in his father's footsteps as he always seemed to be. Maybe Allegra's constant digs about taking over the garage were hitting a tender spot, exactly as she intended. I ran my hands up his arms to his shoulders, shifting my body lower. Right, I said. But that doesn't mean you have... Cooper was shaking his head before I even finished my sentence.
Not everybody has the choices you have, Lane. Not all of us are Roanokes.
His voice wasn't bitter or bored, the way it was when he talked to Allegra about this subject. Only resigned. But maybe you could go to junior college or something, I said, knowing how stupid and pointless it sounded from the look on his face. Before my mother died and I'd come to Roanoke, my chances of doing anything after high school beyond some shit job had been exactly like Cooper's. I knew well the painful futility of reaching for more than you were ever likely to get, how much easier it was to simply accept the limits of your world.
That's for Holly, Cooper said. College. She's got 4 more years, and then she's getting out of here. I'm already saving so she can go.
You're doing that for her? I asked. Cooper, who smoked and drank too much, who picked fights and acted like he didn't give a shit about anything, giving his future away to his little sister. Something inside my chest cracked open. Cooper nodded, crawled up my body.
Now stop talking. We're wasting a perfectly good bed.
He slid into me without preamble, and I arched my back, hissing a breath through my teeth.
Too much?
He asked, even as his hips snapped forward. I shook my head, tightened my arms around him. He stared down at me, and suddenly it was too much. I felt the urge to lash out, claw and bite, desperate to escape. Fear pounded through me, nipping right on the heels of pleasure. I closed my eyes and turned my face away. Now. I'm heading into town to see about catching Cooper for a late lunch when Sharon calls to me from the screened porch. She's standing on the back step, holding out something in her hand. Yeah? I ask.
If you're going into town, can you drop these off?
She shakes the object in her hand but doesn't move from the step, waiting for me to come to her. Typical. What am I dropping off? Sharon sighs.
Sunglasses. That wife of Tommy's left them on the front porch when she visited Allegra. I've been meaning to give them back, but keep forgetting.
My steps falter to a stop. What? When was Sarah out here?
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Sharon marches across the dusty backyard and slaps the sunglasses into my hand. Tacky, white, and cheap. Probably purchased from the revolving rack at the Five and Dime.
It was a few days before Allegra went missing, I'd guess.
What did she want?
I have no earthly idea. She didn't stay long, and never came inside the house, as far as I know.
Sharon cocks her head at me.
You taking them or not?
Yeah, I say, voice slow like I'm just waking up. I'll give them to her. Tommy's front door is adorned with exactly the kind of wreath I'd expect. Fake flowers ringing a jaunty, hand-painted wooden welcome sign. Judging from the way Sarah's face falls when she sees me, she's forgotten the message on her own front door.
Oh, hi, Lane, she says, glancing behind her as if the empty house will save her from having to invite me in. What are you doing here?
Thought I'd stop by. I give her my friendliest smile. It gets a little lonely out at Roanoke. I pull open the screen door without waiting for her to ask, and Sarah's too polite to do anything but stand back, gesture me into her home. The front door leads directly into the small living room. Lots of knickknacks, cheap throw pillows, walls overstuffed with sterile, mass-produced art. Vacuum marks crisscross the beige carpet, not a speck of dust in sight. The air reeks of potpourri, overlaid with the smell of roasting meat, and late afternoon sunlight beams in through gleaming windows. The entire scene smacks of trying too hard. I'm guessing Sarah's the type of woman who would rather die than let Tommy catch sight of a used tampon in the trash, who runs to brush her teeth when she hears his car in the drive, changes her outfit an hour before he's due home. She must be so tired. The saddest part is, if she really knew Tommy, she'd know he doesn't care about any of this. Allegra is a mess in every sense of the word, and Tommy adores her. Sarah probably thinks being perfect is the only way she can compete, and it will never be enough.
Can I get you something to drink? She asks. Lemonade? A soda?
She's wearing the hideous floral print dress she found the day we were both at the second-hand shop, and it doesn't fit quite right. Too loose in the boobs, too tight in the butt. A lethal combination. She yanks at it with one hand as she walks. Lemonade's fine, I say, following her into the kitchen. There's a pie cooling on the counter next to a steaming crock pot. Tommy's going to get fat if he's not careful. Sarah pulls a pink glass tumbler from the shelf, reaches into the fridge for a pitcher of lemonade. Oh, yeah, I say when her back is turned. I have your sunglasses, too. The ones you left out at Roanoke? Sarah's entire body stiffens, but I have to hand it to her. She keeps on pouring the lemonade without spilling a drop. When she passes me my glass, I hold out the sunglasses.
Thanks, she says without meeting my eyes. I've been looking for those.
She
She takes them from me and places them carefully on the counter. When did you find out Tommy and Allegra were screwing? I ask. Right before she disappeared? I take a sip of lemonade and tilt the glass in Sarah's direction. Good stuff. A bright pink blush climbs up Sarah's neck into her cheeks. She rubs both hands down the sides of her dress like she's trying to dry her palms.
He told you.
She releases a sad little laugh.
He hasn't even told me.
He doesn't think you know.
Of course I know.
Sarah sags back against the counter.
How could I not know? He barely looked at me for an entire month. Didn't eat. Stayed up all hours. He kept his phone with him even when he went into the bathroom.
She shakes her head. I'm not stupid. That's what I told him. I set my glass down on the tiny kitchen table. So why did you talk to Allegra about it, instead of talking to Tommy? Sarah looks away.
I thought maybe I could convince her to let him go.
Could you? I ask, but it's only a formality. It wouldn't have mattered if Allegra didn't want Tommy. She never would have given him up on Sarah's say-so.
No.
Sarah crosses her arms over her stomach, swings her eyes back to me.
I thought she would be angry, but she wasn't. It was like she was talking to the mailman or, I don't know, some salesperson. She didn't even care that she was ruining my life, my marriage. She acted like none of it mattered, especially not me. It sounds crazy, but I think it would have been better if she'd been furious.
Allegra could be selfish, I acknowledge, and Sarah's face opens up, thinking maybe she's found an ally. But no matter what Allegra did, no matter how she acted, I'll never take your side over hers. I continue shutting her down fast. I know I should feel sorry for Sarah. She's the only truly injured party here. But my allegiance lies with Allegra, and it always will.
I know that,
Sarah says, a trace of anger in her tone.
No matter what, Allegra always wins.
When you were out at Roanoke, did she tell you about the baby? I ask, and Sarah's whole face caves in, which is answer enough. Did she say if it was Tommy's?
No. But she said if she wanted Tommy, she could have him. All she had to do was snap her fingers and he'd come running.
It's not a flattering picture of Tommy, but I can't argue with the truth of it.
I reminded her Tommy was married now, Sarah continues. And Allegra laughed. That's when she told me she was pregnant. She said...
Sarah's voice falters, and two fat tears slide down her cheeks. She doesn't bother to wipe them away. She said what? Sarah steeples her hands over her nose, takes a deep breath.
She said, she could give Tommy something I couldn't. She could make him a father.
Ah, Allegra, going right for the jugular. And you never told Tommy you went to see her?
No.
Why not?
I thought if I confronted him, it would force his hand. And we both know who he'd choose. Wedding ring or no wedding ring. I hoped if I ignored it, Allegra would lose interest again, and Tommy would come to his senses.
Wow, I say. Sounds like a recipe for an awesome marriage.
What would you know about it?
Sarah snaps with more fight than I've seen from her so far.
Aren't you divorced already?
Her own boldness seems to shock her, her eyes opening wide and her hands back to rubbing furiously against her dress. Yep, and I would say it looks like you'll be joining me there soon. Except, things have worked out pretty well for you.
Her hands stop moving.
What do you mean?
You know what I mean, Sarah. Don't play dumb. You already said you aren't stupid. Allegra's gone, along with the baby that might have wrecked everything for you. You've got Tommy all to yourself now.
No, I don't, Sarah says. It doesn't matter if they never find Allegra. I'm always going to be second best in his mind.
When I first met Sarah, I might have said there's no way she'd ever hurt Allegra. She didn't have the guts or the fire. But Tommy, this house, her vision of herself as the perfect wife, they're her whole world, and most people will do whatever it takes to protect their entire world. That's probably true, I tell her. But it's also a lot easier to live with being second best when first choice is never coming back. My forced glibness must get to her because Sarah's hands ball into fists at her sides.
Girls like you and Allegra have it easy, she says, words trembling on her lips. You don't understand what it's like for the rest of us. How we have to work for every little thing, for every scrap of attention. And you smash into the world, take things that don't belong to you, knock people over like we don't even matter, like you're so special.
Sarah is breathless now, giving voice to her grievances, sucking the air from her lungs.
Allegra always got whatever she wanted, but she didn't get Tommy. Not this time.
The smell of meat from the crock pot is suddenly overwhelming, making my stomach heave, heat pooling in the back of my throat. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about, I say, vicious and razor-edged. I have to resist the urge to slap her, send her frizzy head flying into the cabinet behind her. To Sarah, Allegra is simply a bitch, a spoiled man-stealer. But not one single second of Allegra's life was easy. I know the agony she lived with every day, and I understand how sometimes you have to pass the pain around in order to survive it. No matter the wrongs Allegra committed, Sarah doesn't get to judge her, not when she wouldn't have lasted one day in Allegra's shoes. I brush past Sarah, out of the kitchen and to the front door before I do or say something I can't take back. She follows behind me, hovering over my shoulder.
Are you going to tell Tommy?
She has the nerve to ask.
That I know? That I talked to Allegra? Please don't, she pleads. I can't lose him, Lane. He's all I've ever wanted.
I stop and look back at her. Hard to lose something you never really had, I say, just to watch her flinch. After our one failed attempt at a family dinner, there have been no more formal summonses for me to appear in the dining room. As far as I know, Sharon is still making her dubious creations, but I either forage from the kitchen after dinner, or more often than not meet Cooper in town. Tonight, though, Cooper has to work late, and I'm rummaging through the fridge, not willing to choke down Sharon's leftover tuna casserole, if I can help it. I throw together a quick sandwich and take it out on the front porch, my footsteps slowing when I see my granddad has already claimed the porch swing. I didn't expect him. The porch swing is usually where Gran roosts on warm summer nights, and never until later.
There's room,
he says, looking up at me with a smile. I'm dismayed by how much my body wants to keep moving in his direction. Sit beside him and rest my head on his shoulder. I'm okay over here, I tell him, dropping down to sit with my back against the porch pillar. The June bugs are already out in force, throwing themselves against the window screens with a sound like popping corn. I wave a few away from my head, their hard shells bouncing off my fingers.
Sharon made plenty of dinner earlier, You could have had a real meal with us.
I wasn't in the mood for something hot. And not in the mood to sit around the table staring at my grandparents and Allegra's empty chair. A sandwich is fine.
You've been eating in town a lot,
Granddad says. I take a bite of my sandwich. Yep.
With Cooper Sullivan?
Yep. The sun is sinking in the evening sky, and I hear Charlie around back calling for the dogs, who bark joyfully in response. Granddad leans back in the porch swing. He's got a beer bottle balanced on his knee.
Not surprised, you know,
he says with a little smile.
About you and Cooper starting up again.
We're not starting up again. Granddad cocks his eyebrows at me.
Boy never did get over you.
He pauses.
You sure left a string of broken hearts when you went away.
I put my sandwich down, no longer hungry. Stop it. My voice is harsh, ugly, but my granddad doesn't drop his eyes and the expression on his face doesn't change.
Cooper, Allegra.
He takes a quick swig of beer.
Me?
I bark out a laugh. How come nobody's concerned with my broken heart?
Was your heart broken?
He asks, voice quiet. My throat burns, and I'm glad I set my dinner aside already so I don't choke on a swallow. You know it was, I say. It still is.
I'm sorry,
my granddad says, and he sounds like he means it, which only makes it even more unbearable.
I'm so sorry, Lainey girl.
Don't call me that. I suck in a deep breath. You know, I thought I'd escaped this place. The only one who ever did with only minor damage. That's what I comforted myself with when I was scared or lonely, which was most of the time. Granddad looks like he's about to get up and come over to me, but I stop him with a single glance. But in the end, none of it mattered, because here I am again and it's like I never left. This place never let go of me. I've carried it all these years, like a disease, like a tumor. My voice breaks and I drop my gaze. It's killing me. I look back at him. Did it kill Allegra, too? Granddad shakes his head, the muscle in his jaw thumping. I point at him with an unsteady finger. You shake your head all you like, but I'm going to find out what happened to her. I'm going to find out what you did. I'm going to know.
I didn't touch one hair on her head.
Granddad says in that tone of voice that means he's had about enough.
I would never hurt her.
You hurt her every goddamn day of her life, I shoot back. Granddad sighs, rubs his eyes with one hand.
You want to make me a monster? Pretend you hate me, Lane? Go ahead, if that makes it easier for you.
I do hate you, I say, voice rising. He drops his hand, lifts his eyes until they stare right into mine.
No, you don't.
I try to hold his gaze, but my eyes slide away first. One of the barn cats sneaks out from underneath the steps, stalking my abandoned sandwich. I pull out a piece of turkey and toss it to him. Did you know about the baby? I ask. The cat snatches the turkey from the ground and disappears back under the porch.
No. If she was pregnant, she hadn't told me yet.
What makes you think she was planning to? I look at him again. How do you even know it's yours? It could be Tommy's. Or some random guy's even. Outside sperm. Probably have more of a fighting chance, don't you think? My granddad doesn't have any visible reaction other than a slight shrug of his shoulders.
Wouldn't have mattered to me.
Would have raised it like one of my own.
What if Allegra didn't want that? What if she wanted Tommy?
I know in my gut this isn't true. Allegra would never have chosen Tommy over Granddad. But I want to push him. See if he cracks.
You think I killed her to keep her from leaving me? Taking the baby. Is that it?
My granddad snorts, amused rather than angry.
Are you forgetting your mama took off once upon a time, and I didn't stop her?
That was different. You still had Eleanor. But Allegra was the last Roanoke girl. If she left, that would be the end.
Your logic is failing you, Lane. If I killed Allegra, I'd be in the same boat as if she lived. No more Roanoke girls.
He hesitates, tips his beer bottle in my direction.
Except for you.
His words slam into my body, violent as punches, and I struggle for air against the rising tide of my heartbeat. Except for me. Why didn't I see it before? One Roanoke girl gone, and another fitted seamlessly into her spot. Dread zips along my spine. So Allegra's missing. And here I am, I manage to say. I came home like you wanted.
You came home,
my granddad agrees. He smiles, slow and easy.
Right where you belong.
The breeze picks up and carries the faintest hint of his cologne. And in an instant, I'm transported back to all those mornings with him in the barn, when we'd work together feeding the animals. Probably the only time in my entire life I felt loved. I bite down hard on my lip to keep from screaming, taste the warm tang of blood on my tongue. Run, Lane. Run. I spend the early evening hours getting single-mindedly drunk out on the screened porch. Each sip is a mercy, leading me further into oblivion. Every swallow makes it easier to forget. I work my way through a bottle of wine I found in a kitchen cabinet, follow it with a shot of vodka and a couple of beers for variety, finish with a heel of stale bread to keep it all down. So it's fair to say I'm not at my best when I wander through the door of Ronnie Joe's long after dark. It's more crowded than last time. There's an overflow of bodies packed onto the tiny dance floor. They sway in rhythm to a song, heavy on the nasal drawl, warbling from the jukebox in the far corner. The air is thick with smoke and the stench of armpit. Cooper is seated at the bar, hunched over his drink. His grease-stained fingers hold a cigarette smoked almost down to the filter. I elbow my way through the throng of people near the door and swing up onto the empty stool next to him.
Hey,
he says with a smile when he turns and sees it's me.
What are you doing here?
I shrug. Needed to get out. I signal the bartender by pointing at whatever Cooper has in front of him. Whiskey, maybe. Straight up.
What's the deal tonight? Isn't it a little crowded for a Tuesday?
Cooper's eyes roam over my face.
Dollar draws on Tuesdays.
Tuesdays are big days around here. Tacos and beer. Osage Flats, home of the fat and drunk.
I laugh, a sloppy liquid gurgle.
Sounds like an appropriate slogan.
The bartender brings over my drink, and I start a race to the finish line. The cheap whiskey flames on the way down. I can picture blisters coating the lining of my throat.
How much have you had?
Cooper asks, eyes back on his own drink.
Not nearly enough, I say. But don't worry, I didn't drive. Charlie dropped me off.
Cooper's knee nudges mine underneath the bar as he stubs out his cigarette on the pockmarked bar top.
Think maybe you should slow down?
Nope.
He nods at that, spins his half-empty glass between his hands.
Want to talk about it? We could go back to my place. I've got whiskey there, if that's what you need.
I shake my head. I can't stand that he's being kind to me. Can't stand the ache spreading through my chest that being near him brings. Can't stand all the things he makes me remember when I'm trying so hard to forget. It makes me want to hurt him, just because I can. Something hits me hard in the shoulder and I stagger forward on the stool, throwing one arm out to catch myself against the bar.
Oh, whoops, sorry.
The guy behind me steadies me with his hand. I turn to get a better look at him. He's around my age, dressed in jeans and a light green t-shirt, a Kansas City Royals baseball cap on his head. His neck is pinpricked red with razor burn.
I'm David.
His small huddle of friends, all male, watch our interaction with hungry eyes, leering into their beers. Lane, I say. He grins at me. His eyes are glassy and beer fumes waft off his skin.
Wanna dance?
Maybe, I say as I turn on my bar stool, a little lilt in my voice. I glance over at Cooper. He's watching me, waiting to see what I'm going to do. David shifts his body until he's between Cooper and me, cutting off our eye contact. His fingers dig harder into my arm.
What do you say? One dance?
Okay. One dance. I let him pull me off the bar stool and onto the dance floor. I don't look back at Cooper. The jukebox is not playing a slow song, but David drags me into his arms anyway, holds me too close.
God, you're gorgeous,
he breathes against my cheek.
Way hotter than any of the other girls around here.
I fix my gaze somewhere over his shoulder. I have to concentrate as we spin in slow circles to keep from getting sick. The mirror behind the bar reflects my flushed face on every pass, my eyes wide and unfocused. Cooper never once looks in my direction. After a while, it could be 5 minutes or an hour, my brain isn't keeping track very well. One of David's friends cuts in with a fistful of shot glasses. Tequila, not my drink of choice. But it turns out the old lick-drink-suck routine comes back easily. Like riding a bicycle. When I pass over my empty shot glass, David ducks his head and kisses me. His tongue burrows into the back of my mouth, his teeth clanking against mine. Lime and salt burn on my lips. I pull away, but not as fast as I should. David puts his arm around me, tight and overly familiar. He leans into my ear.
You want to get out of here?
I look over his shoulder and see Cooper's empty bar stool. I push away from David, stumble over his feet and crash into a couple still dancing.
Excuse me, I mumble. Sorry.
I ignore David calling my name and slam out through the door of Ronnie Joe's. It's no cooler outside, but at least the air is clean and clear. The full moon pokes through a tear in the black clouds and illuminates Cooper's back as he disappears across the parking lot. I inhale deeply, the sick swirl of my head fading into the background.
Hey, wait! I call. Where are you going?
Home.
He doesn't stop or turn around. I hurry after him, not running. I don't think my stomach can handle it. But quick, fumbling steps.
Don't go! Wait!
He slows only when he reaches his truck and shifts to greet me with a sigh.
What?
Why are you leaving?
Because it's late, and I have to work tomorrow.
We could have one more drink.
You have one more drink,
and you're gonna pass out on the floor, or end up spread eagle in the backseat of that guy's car.
His eyes are like flint.
Thanks, but no thanks. Either way, that's a show I don't need to catch.
Cooper! I reach out and grab his hand, the skin rough and warm under my fingers.
Don't you ever get tired of your own bullshit?
He asks, yanking his hand free.
What in the hell do you want from me? You want me to go back in there and beat the shit out of that guy? Pound him, the way I used to? Find some girl to fuck so we're even, so you won't have to feel guilty?
Cooper is breathing hard, his hands curled into fists.
You want it to be like old times, is that it?
I throw myself forward, pressing my body against his, and Cooper chokes out a sound that's not quite a swear. I think there's better than even odds he'll shove me away. But he spins us around instead, slams me back against his truck, his hands touching whatever part of me they can reach. I work a hand free and pull on the driver's door, opening it far enough that Cooper can push it wide with his hip, toss me onto the bench seat, and climb in on top of me. He raises his head, opens his mouth like he's going to try to say something, and I clamp a hand over his lips.
Please,
I whisper, as I lift my hips. I sound like I'm begging, and I hate him for making me do it. My lips find the hollow of his throat.
Please.
He grabs my head in both hands, forcing me to look at him.
God damn you, Lane,
he says through clenched teeth, but he pulls me closer, his hands already ripping my shorts down over my hips. And if he's rougher than he needs to be, if there's a knife's edge of violence to his touch, who am I to complain? After all, it's no more than I deserve.
Emmeline, born 1984, died 1984. They buried her in a white casket lined with pink satin, dark hair curled like silk against her tiny skull, rosebud mouth, lids stitched closed over the Roanoke eyes. 15 pounds and 27 inches. 6 months old. Emmeline Justine Roanoke. Beloved daughter. Cherished sister. Our beautiful girl. Then. Now that Allegra was over her mood and we were back to talking, she had enlisted me to help find her mother's diary. The few pages she'd found last year had been wedged into a crack between boards in the hayloft, but she'd never come across the rest of the diary. Today we were tearing apart the library looking for it. Allegra had the idea maybe her mother had stashed the diary in among the regular books. Perfect camouflage, according to Allegra. Why do you want to find it so much? I asked, pulling a stack of books off the shelf. Allegra paused in the act of flipping through pages.
Because I don't know anything about her.
Not really. Only stupid stories from Granddad that sound like they're made up. She was so perfect. I mean, duh. Clearly she wasn't a saint. I had to laugh at that. I don't think any of them were. Or us either.
Don't you want to know more about your mom? Allegra asked. If you could find out what she really thought or felt, wouldn't you want to know?
Not particularly. I set the first stack of books aside and reached for another. The library was cleaned regularly, but still dust had settled and my nose itched. I scrunched up my face to hold in a sneeze. My mom's brain isn't a place I want to spend quality time. Allegra's eyes flared, her hands tightening on the book she held.
Well, I'd like to know why my mom was so quick to abandon me. At least yours took you with her.
She didn't have much choice, I said, considering I was inside her. Allegra rolled her eyes.
You know what I mean.
Have you ever tried looking for your mom?
No.
Allegra bit her lip, kept her gaze on the book in her hands.
Never?
I couldn't believe the lore of the computer hadn't called to her at least once.
Allegra shrugged. Okay, yeah. I Googled her a couple of times. Nothing ever came up. She obviously doesn't want me to find her.
The sadness in her eyes surprised me. Here she was, longing for her mother, and most days I wished my mom had been the one to leave me behind. Honestly, Allegra, you might have gotten the better end of the deal. Living with my mom wasn't exactly an advertisement for family. Allegra got that look on her face, the same one she'd had at the swimming hole. Like something was pushing its way out of her, her lips already forming the words I was dying to hear.
What are you girls doing?
Gran asked from the doorway, and the moment passed quicker than a snap of my fingers. My chance to know what Allegra was keeping inside whisked away again.
Looking for my mom's diary, Allegra said without turning around.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Gran said. I want all these books put back when you're done. Did you hear me, Allegra?
Yeah, whatever, Allegra mumbled.
Gran ventured a little farther into the room, sidestepping our piles of books.
If there's something you want to know about your mother, you can always ask me, she said.
Allegra didn't even look up.
I've tried that before. You never want to talk about her. And all I get from Granddad are stories about how she could commune with the animals and wandered around singing happy songs.
Like Cinderella? I asked.
Exactly, Allegra said.
Slutty Cinderella. And we both cracked up.
That's not true, Gran said.
Please, Allegra said. All Granddad does is sugarcoat.
I sat down on the floor and started sorting through the books, looking for one that didn't belong.
You know, Gran said, stepping around me. I have no idea where Eleanor's diary is, but I have something else you might find interesting.
What?
Allegra asked, hopping to her feet. Gran scanned a row of books, standing on tiptoe to reach the top shelf. She pulled down a wide, thick book, covered in faded black fabric, the pages bunched and uneven.
Here it is.
She sat down in one of the armchairs near the fireplace, and Allegra and I stood on either side of her, both of us peering down at the book on her lap.
What is it? I asked.
The front of the book had no markings or title, and the whole thing looked homemade.
A hair book, Gran said, lifting the cover gently.
What the hell is a hair book?
Allegra asked, raising her eyebrows in my direction. I mouthed, I have no idea, and turned my attention back to the book in Gran's lap. Gran sighed, gave Allegra a long-suffering look.
A hair book is exactly what it sounds like. A book of hair.
Gran opened the book, and there, right on the first page, was a collection of hair. Some of it short and wispy, as though saved from a baby's first haircut. Other locks longer and thicker, and bound to the page with frayed ribbon.
This is a Roanoke family heirloom, Gran told us. Your granddad's grandma started it, and everyone's added to it over the years.
Gran flipped to the back of the book.
This is your Aunt Penelope's hair.
Gran ran her thin fingers over a heavy braid, tied at the end with a dull white ribbon.
We cut it right before she was buried.
The hair was dark, like Allegra's and mine, but gilded with a hint of blondish highlights as the sun coming through the library window hit the strands. She fell down the stairs, right? I asked. I wanted to reach down and touch the braid, but I wasn't sure if Gran would allow it. Her fingers on the braid looked possessive, like she might pinch me for getting too close.
Yeah, Allegra said.